Thank you very much for the kind introduction and the invitation. I grew up in Washington. This is my first time in this building, and it's a pleasure to be here. So I want to talk today about a very old problem, and the question is easy to state. It's given a whole number d, 1, 2, 3, can you find a right triangle with three rational sides and area equal to d? Okay, well, it's easy to translate this from a problem about triangles to a problem about rational numbers. So rational numbers, we're looking for rational numbers A, B, and C here as the sides of the triangle. So rational numbers are just fractions, ratios of whole numbers. And certainly you learn in school at a young age that to be a right triangle is just to say that A squared plus B squared is C squared. That's the Pythagorean theorem. And the area of this triangle, because it's a right triangle, is AB over 2. So you can forget the triangles if you like, and for a number theorist, maybe you would, and just say we're looking for rational numbers A, B, and C, such that A squared plus B squared is C squared, and AB over 2 is equal to this D that we're starting with. Okay, so can somebody give me a right triangle with three rational sides? How did I know you were going to say that? Okay, so that's everybody's favorite right triangle, at least with rational sides. The area, that's a right triangle because A squared plus B squared is C squared. 9 plus 16 is 25. And the area is 1 half of 3 times 4, so it's 6. So for D, if D is 6, the answer is yes, there is a rational triangle, a rational right triangle with area 6. Here's a rational right triangle with area 5. It's not as obvious unless you've played with this a lot, but if you check, A squared plus B squared is still C squared, and you can really check by looking at it that AB over 2 is 5. Okay, here's a right triangle with area 1. A is 1, B is 2, C is the square root of 5. A squared plus B squared is C squared, and AB over 2 is 1. But of course, that's cheating. That doesn't satisfy the conditions of my question because the square root of 5 is not a rational number. So that's not a right triangle. It's not a rational right triangle. And in fact, it was proved by Fermat in the 17th century that there is no right triangle with rational sides and area 1. So if you think about it, to show that there is a right triangle with the right area is a very different procedure, different process than showing that there isn't. To show that there is a right triangle with rational sides in area 6, I can just write one down for you and you'll be convinced. How are you going to show that there is no right triangle with rational sides in area 1? That's a very different thing to do. And so that's what Fermat did, and I'll talk a little bit more about that question as we go along. Okay, but let me start by giving you what is the best answer that we know to this question. So there are a few formulas here, but it's not so complicated. So we're starting with D, the number we want to ask, is there a right triangle with rational sides at area D? Okay, so there's this extra integer A, which is just 1 if D is odd and 2 if D is even. And then we count the solutions of these two different equations. We take x squared plus 2ay squared plus 8z squared equals d over a. So treat that as an equation in the three variables x, y, and z, and ask how many integer solutions are there? So positive or negative or zero integers. And there can't be too many of them because, I mean, integers get big, and then x squared and 2ay squared and 8z squared are all positive, so the integers can't be too big. You just have to check. And I'll do some examples in a minute. So n is the number of solutions to that first equation. M is the number of solutions to the second equation, where I've just changed the one coefficient, the coefficient of z squared. So that's something you can do. And then the theorem is that if n is not equal to 2m, then there's no rational right triangle with area d. And parallel to this, there's a conjecture, which means we'd like to make it a theorem, but we don't know how to prove it. But it's expected to be true for reasons I will describe a bit later, that if n is equal to 2m, then there is a rational right triangle with area d. Okay, so in other words, if you accept the conjecture, at least we've reduced the question to just counting these solutions of a quadratic equation in three variables. So let's just look at some examples of this. If D is 1, then A is 1, and we're just asking, how many solutions are there? X squared plus 2y squared plus 8z squared equals 1. Well, y and z have to be 0, or the answer is going to be too big. And that means x squared equals 1, so x is plus or minus 1. So n is 2. The only solutions are 1, 0, 0, and minus 1, 0, 0. And the solutions for m are exactly the same. Again, once z is 0, then the equations are the same. So n is 2, m is 2, n is not equal to 2m. Continuing like this, if d is 2, well then a is 2, so d over a is 1, and we're pretty much in the same situation as we were before. They're both equal to 2. If d is 3, then we're looking at x squared plus 2y squared equals 3, and now x can be plus or minus 1, and y can be plus or minus 1, so there are 4 solutions, both for n and for m. And again, it's not so important what the answer is, but it's very easy to check. If you're given a d, if it's not too big, you can just count. You can look at them. How are we going to make x squared plus 2y squared plus 8z squared equal to 5, the whole number, the integers? And the answer is you can't. And you can see pretty easily that you can't. I mean, again, z has to be 0, x and y have to be small, and they're just not going to work. So n is 0 and m is 0. That happens again for 6 and for 7. There's just no way to solve those equations in integers. For 11, we get solutions, but they're not the same number for n and m, because now the z term comes into play. When d is 34, again, you can check this, you get, again, a positive number of solutions. There are solutions, and now n is equal to 2m. You keep going for a while and get to 157. Again, there are no solutions. And now you think about it for a while and don't just try it blindly. And what you can show without too much trouble is that if D is 5, 6, or 7 more than a multiple of 8, what number theorists call 5, 6, or 7 modulo 8, so a multiple of 8 plus 5, 6, or 7, then there's just no way to solve these equations. And you can see that just by checking. If x is going to be either 1 or 2 or 3 or so on more than a multiple of 8, there are only 8 possibilities. Whatever, and similarly for y and for z, no matter what you plug in, the left-hand side can't be 5, 6, or 7 more than a multiple of 8. So in all these cases, n and m are both 0. In particular, n is equal to 2m. Okay, well, here's our table. What does this tell us? It says if d is 1, n is not 2m, so there shouldn't be a right triangle with area 1. And we already saw that Fermat said there isn't. Similarly, if d is 2, then n and m are 2. N is not 2m. If d is 3, n is not 2m. 5, n is 2m. And we've already seen a right triangle there with 5 and with 6. 7 we haven't seen, but we expect one, and we can find it. 11, again, n is not 2m, so there isn't one. 34, n is 2m, so there should be one, and we find it. 157, n is 2m, so there should be one, and we look for a while. So notice that we have changed the problem around. Originally, it looked like it was easy to show that something is, that there is a right triangle of the right area, whereas it's hard to show that one can't exist. Now we have a very simple way, along with that theorem I stated, to show that one doesn't exist. You just count the number of solutions of these two equations. If n is not 2m, we know there isn't one. If n is 2m, we think there is one, but it's not always easy to find. So this is the simplest rational right triangle with area 157. There are others, but they're more complicated. So one question which I won't be able to get into is, once we think there is one, how do we find it? And that uses a lot of deep mathematics, in particular in this example. In some examples, even the method that worked here won't work, and then it's a real good question. What do you do? Okay, so what I would like to talk about, though, is how Well, okay, a little more about this, the consequences of this theorem and this conjecture. So remember, if D is 5, 6, or 7 more than a multiple of 8, then N and M are both 0. So for all of those integers, and that's lots of them, we expect that there is a rational right triangle with area D, but we don't know. Noam Elkies at Harvard has checked this for D up to a million, and in each case he's been able to find one. We do know that if P is a prime, and of course it can't be 6 more than a multiple of 8, because it has to be odd if it's bigger than 2. So if it's a prime and it's 5 or 7 more than a multiple of 8, then you can prove by the methods that went into the solution for 157 that there is a rational right triangle with area P. Okay, so what I want to talk about for most of the rest of this talk is how do we come up with this rather strange answer to this question? And what we're going to do is translate this question about right triangles into a question about elliptic curves, which is what the title of the talk was about. So if we start with a right triangle with area D, we can define x and y, take x to be 1/2 times a minus c, and y to be 1/2 times a squared times c minus a, and then with a little patience you can check that y squared is equal to x cubed minus d squared x. Okay, just using the fact that d is equal to a times b over 2, and c squared is a squared plus b squared, you can check this. So, in particular, well, for example, if you start with the 3, 4, 5 triangle, so A is 3 and B is 4 and C is 5, so D is 6, and you plug it into this formula and you get a solution to the equation y squared equals x cubed minus 36x. And I'm going to want to think of this equation, y squared equals x cubed minus d squared x, as defining a curve, and minus 3 comma 9 is a point on this curve with rational coordinates, in this case, integer coordinates. And you can go back in the other direction, too. If you start, I should say one more thing, actually. Notice that if, I didn't say anything about A, B, and C being rational, but if A and B and C are rational, then X and Y are rational. So if you start with a rational right triangle, you end up with rational numbers X and Y satisfying this equation. If you start with X and Y satisfying the equation, and if Y is not zero, then you can write down a triangle. That A be the absolute value of x squared minus b squared over y. B is absolute value of 2xd over y. C is the absolute value of x squared plus d squared over y. And you can check that the product of the two shorter sides is d, using the fact that y squared is x cubed minus d squared x. And this is a right triangle because that is a Pythagorean triple. So if you start with a solution and y is not 0, you get a right triangle. If x and y are rational numbers, then the sides of the triangle are rational numbers. So what we're showing now is that rational right triangles with area D correspond exactly to the solutions of this equation, x and y, where x and y are rational and y is not 0. Obviously, we need y to be not 0 to get, if we're going to write down this particular triangle. So I'll call that a theorem. The answer to our original question is yes. There is a right triangle with rational size in area D if and only if there are rational numbers x and y not 0, satisfying this equation y squared equals x cubed minus d squared x. And this equation defines an elliptic curve. So, why are we any better off now than the original question about triangles or using the two equations? Well, we have reduced those two equations, the Pythagorean triple equation and the area equation. We've reduced it to one, which is making our lives easier. But even more, there is a whole theory that people have developed about elliptic curves that we're now going to be able to use to try to answer this second question. Are there rational solutions with y not equal 0, x and y on this elliptic curve? So here's the graph of the example, the curve with y with d equals 6. So d squared is 36. So the graph is the graph of all the real pairs, the real numbers x and y satisfying this equation. Of course, we're interested in the rational numbers, not all the real numbers. Now, there are three pairs you can see right away, and they're the ones we don't care about. They're the ones where y is equal to 0. And so the question is, in general, are there any others? In this case, we know there is another one. There's the one that corresponded to the 3, 4, 5 right triangle. We plugged that into our equations, and we got this solution where x is minus 3 and y is 9, that the axes aren't exactly to scale in this picture to make it fit better. But that's a rational point on this elliptic curve. What can we do with it? Well, we can draw the tangent line from that point to this curve, and it's going to intersect the curve in another point. And you can show it's not a coincidence that it's a rational point where it hits this curve. If you solve for the intersection of this line with the curve, you're going to get a cubic equation in one variable. So in general, it will have three roots. But two of the roots are going to correspond to the original point, minus 3, 9, where it was tangent. And so that means there's a third root. And if you have a cubic equation with rational coefficients and two rational roots, it's not hard to see that the third root is rational. So we get a rational point. We get two of them, in fact, because we can always reflect one rational point, change the sign of the y-coordinate to get another. And now what we can do is we can join those two points, and we're going to get another point with rational coordinates. It's still a rational number. You wouldn't necessarily know it by computing a decimal expansion because the rational numbers are getting more and more complicated. And we can keep doing this. The new point has lots and lots of digits, and we can still keep doing it, but it gets to be painful to write them all out. And we can always reflect these points. Starting with this one solution, this minus 3, 9, we've constructed a lot more. And in fact, you can show that this procedure, in this case, is going to give infinitely many pairs, rational numbers, x and y, satisfying y squared equals x cubed minus 36x. And every one of them corresponds to a right triangle with rational sides and area 6. So, for instance, this was the one we started with. Then we got another one, another one, another one, another one. Eventually, it gets to be too painful to write out all the coordinates, so let's just write the x coordinate. And if we keep going, it looks like this. Now, there's a lot of interesting stuff going on in here, too, and I don't want to dwell on it, but before we leave it, I mean, if you look, especially from the back row and you squint, this should look like a parabola. And that's something you can prove. That if you make this list these triangles by the order of, by how many digits there are in the numerator and denominator, it's an infinite list. And the nth one, the nth element of the list, has about 0.38 times n squared digits. And that's where this parabola comes from. But you can keep going as far as you care to. Okay, well, this isn't, there's nothing particularly special about 6 in this example. But before we go on, let me come back and talk about elliptic curves in general. Okay, so an elliptic curve is a curve defined by an equation. This is just slightly more general than the y squared equals x cubed minus d squared x. We're allowed to have a constant term and a linear term in our cubic equation in x. But that's not so complicated. There is one condition that if you form this quantity that's usually called the discriminant delta, which is 16 times 4a cubed plus 27b squared, you want that not to be 0. Geometrically, that makes this curve non-singular. It doesn't intersect itself or have corners. It also is just saying that the cubic equation x cubed plus ax plus b over the complex numbers has three different roots. Okay, so that's what an elliptic curve is. And for a number theorist, the basic problem is, if you're given an elliptic curve, find all the solutions in rational numbers, or maybe integers, but in our case we're looking at rational numbers. So we're looking at rational pairs x and y satisfying this equation, which, if we think geometrically, these are just rational points, points with rational coordinates that lie on the curve defined by this equation. And so for the elliptic curve y squared equals x cubed minus x, that's what we were looking at before when d is 1, y squared minus is x cubed minus d squared x. Then what Fermat was really proving when he proved that there is no right triangle with rational sides in area 1 is he was proving that there are only three rational points on this elliptic curve, and they're the what we call the trivial ones, the ones with y equal to 0. So there's no extra point, there's no other rational point with y non-zero, which means that there's no elliptic curve. There's no right triangle with rational size and area 1. And if you want to think about this, just this question, looking at rational solutions to this equation, it's not hard to show that the only solutions where x and y are integers are those three. But it's really highly non-trivial to show that the only solutions in rational numbers are those three. And Fermat developed a lot of machinery to do that, which is still underlies a lot of what one does today when one is studying elliptic curves. Okay, so any elliptic curve, all elliptic curves have this property that if you start with one point and draw the tangent, you get a new rational point, or if you connect two different points and you look at the third point of intersection, that's a new rational point. So you can think of that as an addition law. We're not just adding points in the plane, but we can take one rational point on this elliptic curve and another rational point on this elliptic curve. It's an operation that lets us combine these two points and come up with the third. The operation is draw the line between them and see where else it hits the curve. That will always be a new rational point, new point with rational coordinates. And the first big theorem in this subject was due to Mordell in 1922, and he proved that this set of all the rational points is finitely generated. So it's not, in general, finite. It might be finite, it might not. Finitely generated means you can start, there is a finite set of points you can start with that will let you generate all the others, but if you could allow yourself to draw, to keep drawing lines, infinitely many lines. So that's the sense in which even though the set of rational points is maybe infinite, it still is controllable in some finite way. Okay. Now, it may be that you, no matter how many lines you draw, you end up with the same finite set of points. So that happens, for example, with, well, in Fermat's curve, y squared equals x cubed minus x, those three trivial rational points are all on a line. So you, no matter which two of them you join, you always just get the other one back. So Nagel and Lutz in the 1930s independently came up with a way to decide when that happens. Namely, given a point, if you start this process, when do you just stay inside a fixed finite set? And if we apply what they did to this, these curves, y squared equals x cubed minus d squared x, what they show is that if the whole set of rational points is finite, then it's just the trivial one. If you can find one non-trivial rational point, then there are going to be infinitely many solutions. This is what happened we saw when d equals 6, or at least I said when d equals 6 and showed you the first few. But that will always happen for these curves. In other words, having one non-trivial solution is the same as having infinitely many non-trivial solutions. And of course that, well, that's what I just said, I guess. If there's one non-trivial solution, there are infinitely many. And if, going back to our question about right triangles, that means that if there's one rational right triangle of area D, then there are infinitely many. Because if there's one non-trivial solution, non-trivial rational point on the elliptic curve, there are infinitely many. That somehow makes this seem like an easier question to answer. Remember, we're trying to ask whether there is some non-trivial rational point. Well, now what we're asking is, are there infinitely many rational points? So what we need to do is distinguish between an elliptic curve with just a few points or with infinitely many. And somehow you can hope that that's easier than asking if you have 3 points or 4 points. So that's become our sort of the question interesting for this question about right triangles. How can we determine whether the number of rational points is finite or infinite? And the quick answer is, we don't know. So there's no known algorithm, no matter how much time you give yourself, that will be that's guaranteed to answer this question. Now there are things you can do to try. You could just start looking for points. You can start look at all rational numbers with numerator and denominator up to a million and see if you find any solutions. If you don't, you can go up to a billion. You can just keep going. The trouble is you don't know whether you're just looking blindly and it's not going to work or not. But at least for these the curves we're interested in, as soon as you find one non-trivial point, you know they're infinitely many. What about working the other way, trying to show that the number of rational points is finite? Well, again, there are ways to do this. Fermat did it in his curve. But if you analyze what's going on, it's just also not guaranteed to work. In the sense that you can, no matter if you write down the standard algorithm, or what the only way people really know how to try to do this, you can imagine sort of complicated elliptic curves where this method would fail, or at least force you to work harder than you'd ever, you know, had to try before. So there are no guarantees. Okay, so if that's the case, what are we going to do? Well, so this leads us to some work of Birch and Swinnert and Dyer, which I guess I'd like to describe now. So what is it we're asking? We're asking how many rational solutions are there to the equation y squared equals x cubed plus ax plus b, which we can rewrite as y squared minus x cubed minus ax minus b is 0. So how often is that 0? How many pairs of rational numbers can we find where that is 0? Well, that question is too hard, so we're going to break that up into a whole lot of questions that we can answer. Namely, for every prime number p, how often is that quantity a multiple of p? If that quantity, if that difference is 0, then it's a multiple of every prime. Because 0 is a multiple of every prime. On the other hand, if it's not divisible by p very often, then we might guess that it's not going to be 0 very often. And that may sound like a rather strange idea, but this was the idea, and it seems to work. So bear with me. So what are we going to do to count this? Well, if we have an elliptic curve, say the one given by that equation, for every prime p, we can just count the number of integers x and y between 0 and p minus 1 for which p divides that difference. The reason we can restrict to this finite range is if you add p to x, or add a multiple of p to x, it's not going to change the answer as to whether p divides that quantity, because that quantity is going to change by a multiple of p also. So just by checking these p squared values, we get an idea of how all integers will behave. So n sub p of e is just the number of pairs out of these p squared possibilities. How often is this difference divisible by p? And what Birch and Swinnert and Dyer suggested was that the more rational points you have, the larger these quantities should be on average. Okay, well, we have to try to make sense of that. So first, let me just show you an example. So here's, for the curve y squared equals x cubed minus x, here's n sub phi. We want to know how often is this difference divisible by phi. So I've just made a table with the x's on the left, the y's at the top. For each pair x and y, we can compute this quantity y squared minus x cubed minus x. There are two zeros in the table. Those correspond to actual rational points where the difference is 0. But there are others where the difference is not 0, but it is a multiple of 5. So there are 7 values in this table where the difference is a multiple of 5. And so this n sub 5 of e is 7. Okay, well, one can do better for this particular elliptic curve. Gauss gave essentially a formula, or at least a recipe, for computing this number. And if your prime p is 3 more than a multiple of 4, then it's easy. Then the number of values for which p divides that difference is exactly p. If p is 1 more than a multiple of 4, then it is more complicated, but that's really where the interesting part comes in. If p is 1 more than a multiple of 4, then Gauss knew that meant you could write it as a sum of two squares. So I've written it as u squared plus v squared here with integers u and v. Now that doesn't pin it down uniquely because you could always switch u and v. But in this case, p is odd, so one of u and v is odd and the other is even. So let's call u the odd one. That still doesn't pin it down because we can still change the sign of u. And so you can always change the sign of u to guarantee that u plus v minus 1 is a multiple of 4. That tells us exactly what u is, and then the answer, n sub p of e, is p minus 2u. Okay, now notice that the size of n sub p of e is going to be quite close to p, because u squared is less than p. P is u squared plus v squared, so u can't be any bigger than the square root of p. So here we're taking p and subtracting something like twice the square root of p, which is much smaller if p is large. So well, we want to study the average growth of this, the average size of this n sub p of e, but on average it's about p, so the difference is going to be pretty subtle. And in fact, Hasse proved that this holds for any elliptic curve, not just the one Gauss studied, that n sub p of e is within 2 square root of p itself. So how do we measure this? Well, here's what Birch and Swinnert and Dyer computed. They took the product over primes less than x of n sub p of e plus 1 over p. And there's a good reason for the plus 1, which I think I won't go into. But you're comparing this average size to p. Form this product, take more and more primes, and see what happens. Okay, well, I've reproduced some of these calculations. So this is for x up to, well, it's about, well, somewhere past 15 million. Computing, so for the curve d equals 1, y squared equals x cubed minus x. Remember, this is the one that Fermat showed only had the three trivial rational points. You form this product, and it looks pretty steady, pretty much constant. And so you can keep doing that. Here's what happens if d is 2. Here's what happens if d is 3. Remember, those were all examples where there were only the three trivial rational points. Here's d is 5. Notice, I should have said this before, we don't have to do d equals 4. Because if you're looking for a right triangle with area 4, you can just scale it by a factor of 2. The sides are still rational, and you reduced it to 1. So we don't have to worry about d being divisible by a square. If d is divisible by the square of some integer, let's just get rid of it. So I've skipped 4. D equals 5, remember, did have 1 and therefore infinitely many non-trivial solutions. D equals 6 did. D equals 7 did. And so it begins to look like maybe there is something to this idea, that this product, as wiggly as it is or poorly behaved as it is, might actually be distinguishing between the cases where you have infinitely many rational points or just finitely many. And then we go to our friend 157, and it's less clear. It certainly looks more like it belongs to 1, 2, and 3. On the other hand, we know that for d equals 157, there is a non-trivial rational point. So there are infinitely many rational points. So what does this mean? Well, it doesn't mean we should give up because things will get better. It means we need a better way to measure these numbers and to measure the behavior of these. But the other thing it's telling us, and this is even on a more subtle level, is that, remember, this curve with d equals 157, although we now know it has infinitely many rational points, think about how hard you had to look to find one. If you're just doing this computer program that searches through rational numbers, you had to wait a long, long time for the first one. So what you would expect, or the optimistic expectation here is that this d equals 157 data would climb. It's just going to take a lot longer because you have to look so much farther to find the rational points. Okay, so we need a better way to study these n sub p's. And the better way turns out to be to define something called the L function attached to these. This is a generalization of the Riemann zeta function for people who get familiar with the Riemann zeta function. You have this infinite product over all the good primes, the primes not dividing this. Remember, there was this discriminant delta, just this non-zero integer. If you expand this out, you get a Dirichlet series. You get summation a sub n over n to the s. And I don't care so much about what it is, but I'm thinking of it as a function of a complex variable. And it will converge nicely whenever the real part of S is bigger than 3 halves. So on half of the complex plane, you get a really nice analytic function that encodes in its definition, in a rather bizarre way, but it does encode these n sub p's. Why is it related to what we want? Well, if we plug in S equals 1 into this formula, which I can't emphasize enough, is not allowed, because it's not in the range where this product converges. But if we do it anyway, there's lots of cancellation. We get a p over p to the s, that cancels the 1. We get a p over p to the 2s, that gives us our 1 over p, and we're left with this quantity that Birch and Swinnert and Dyer were computing, except now it's the infinite product. Okay, well, so the way we want to interpret this idea of Birch and Swinnert and Dyer is that somehow the behavior of this function at 1 should tell us about how big the set of rational points in this elliptic curve is. And so, to make that precise, we first want to say that we can make sense of the L function at s equals 1. Remember, so far we've defined it by a product that doesn't converge there. And it was conjectured for a long time and finally proved by Well, mostly by Andrew Wiles and completed by several other people as part of his work on Fermat's last theorem. This was what was called the Shimura-Taniyama conjecture, that this L function has an analytic continuation to the whole complex plane. So this is a theorem now, and at least we know that this L function, the value of the L function at 1 makes sense. But even before we knew that, it was conjectured, and Birch and Swinnert and Dyer were willing to add to this conjecture the statement that the number of rational points is infinite if and only if this L function vanishes. And that agrees with their idea, because remember, this L function at 1 kind of is the inverse of this product they were computing. The more rational points there are, the bigger the n sub p of these should be, so the faster this product should go to 0, the inverse of their product. So that's a part of the Birch and Swinnert and Dyer conjecture. The Birch and Swinnert and Dyer conjecture is one of the Clay Millennium Million Dollar problems, but that you have to do a little bit more than this part. Okay, so what do we know about that? Well, we know now, thanks to work of lots of people, so Coates and Wiles covered the cases that apply to the curves y squared equals x cubed minus d squared x, and then Kolyvagin and Kato, and there are really many other names I should be listing, finally completed this to prove that, well, this one direction. If there are infinitely many rational points, then the L function has to vanish. In the other direction, we just have the conjecture that if the L function LE1 is 0, then there should be infinitely many rational points. Okay, so if we go back to our elliptic curve E sub D, the one connected with right triangles, so we conclude that if the L function of E sub D at 1 is not 0, then there is no right triangle with rational sides in area D. Because if the L function is not 0 at 1, that says E of Q can't be infinite. If it were, the L function would be 0. So this gives us a numerical test to see that if we're lucky, we'll show there is no right triangle of rational sides at area D. And it turns out, you wouldn't know it from what I've told you, but the L, E, D at 1 are actually quite easy to compute, at least if D is not too many digits. And so here's an example. If D is 1, we have the elliptic curve y squared equals x cubed minus x. L E sub 1 at 1, there's a bunch of decimal places, but it's certainly more than you need to show that this number is not 0. So we know it's not 0. Since it's not 0, we know this elliptic curve has only finitely many rational points, and then by the theorem of Nagel and Lutz, we know that means there are only the trivial ones. And so, as Fermat proved, that tells us there is no right triangle with rational sides in area 1. And strangely enough, if you really go through the proof, it has a lot in common with Fermat's proof. In the end, the way you're showing this equation has no rational solutions, no non-trivial rational solutions, really comes down to Fermat's idea, although it's packaged in a very, very different way. Well, if we want to come, though, to the answer, something like what I gave at the beginning, we need a better way to evaluate this L of E sub D at 1. We want to decide whether it vanishes or not, and we don't want to have to compute each one individually. And so that's a theorem of Jerry Tunnell from 1983, and he showed that for these particular elliptic curves, the y squared equals x cubed minus d squared x, here's a nice closed formula for the value of the L function at 1. A, remember, was that integer which is 1 if d is odd and 2 if d is even. N and m were the numbers of solutions of these equations. And so the only other things in this formula are, well, there's a square root of d, and then there's this elliptic integral, which is where elliptic curves get their name from. But that's just a number. That's just a constant that doesn't depend on d, doesn't depend on anything. We're integrating a positive function from 1 to infinity. It's just some fixed positive transcendental number. So how is this going to vanish? Well, it's going to vanish if and only if n is equal to 2m. The only term there that can vanish is n minus 2m. And so we get the theorem I stated at the beginning. If there is a right triangle with rational sides in area D, then there's a non-trivial point on this elliptic curve. So there are infinitely many points on this rational points on this elliptic curve. So the L function has to vanish at 1. There's the formula. Well, the only way it can vanish is if n is equal to 2m. Okay, so where does that leave us? Well, we would still like to prove the converse of this theorem. Namely, if n is equal to 2m, we would like to know that there is a rational left triangle with area D. We don't know that in general. Better yet, if n equals 2m, find one. You can imagine proving that one exists without actually finding it. Finding it can be hard in these examples where it seems to be unusually large. And so again, there is a method that works a lot of the time, but it's not going to always work. And then finally, this also turns out to be an interesting question. If D is 1, 2, or 3 more than a multiple of 8, so those are circumstances where sometimes, in fact, often we know there is no right triangle with rational sides in area D. But still, it'll happen sometimes. We expect it to happen 0% of the time overall, but we do expect it to happen infinitely often, and the question is, how many? How often? Okay, so those are questions that come to mind. Let me finish with a little bit. So that's the explanation for the answer to the question I gave at the beginning. But since I've got you here, and you've been nicely accepted so much about elliptic curves already, let me just go with a little bit more. It turns out there's a natural way to view the set of rational points on the elliptic curve as a lattice in an r-dimensional Euclidean space for some r. Now, I've drawn the case r equals 2 here, but r could be 0 or 1 or 7 or there. It's not the obvious way. We're not just graphing the points on the elliptic curve because the elliptic curve didn't look like that. But there is a way to embed the points in Euclidean space in such a way that the addition law on the curve, the way to combine two points to get a third point, does correspond to just adding the lattice points in this lattice. And what's even more useful about this is that the distance of one of these lattice points from the origin corresponds in a precise way to the size of the numerator and denominator of the coordinates of that point. So the points close to the origin are the points with simple x and y coordinates, where simple means the numerator and denominator are relatively small. Okay, so how many points in the lattice are there within distance b of the origin? Well, it depends on the dimension of the lattice. The higher the dimension of the lattice, the more points you can find close in. If it's a one-dimensional lattice, just points on the line, then the number of points within a distance b is just like b, or 2b. If it's a two-dimensional lattice, it's going to be more like b squared, and so on. So you can imagine determining the dimension by taking larger and larger boxes and counting the number of solutions. Remember, counting the number of lattice points within B of the origin is just the same as counting the solutions to the elliptic curve, the rational points X and Y, where the numerator and denominator of X and Y are no bigger than B. So let's do that. Here's the number of points in a box like that. They're growing like the side squares up to some constant. And so if you could do this long enough and had enough patience, you could recover this integer r in the following precise way. So the height of a rational number you just define to be the size, the maximum of the numerator and denominator. So we're measuring how complicated the rational number is. And then if you start looking for rational points on your elliptic curve where the rational numbers lie in some box, the rational numbers are no more complicated than b. Their numerator and denominator less than b, and you let b grow, the number of points grows like a constant times the logarithm of b to the r over 2 power. So this is how you can recover that rank. If you really knew all these numbers on the left for every b, you could see what r is. And when I say these are approximately the same, I mean the ratio really converges to 1 as b goes to infinity. Okay, this integer, which I think I've already called the rank, is called the rank. And it's measuring how many, it's really measuring the size of the set of rational points in a way that makes sense even when that size is infinite. The larger the rank, the more rational points, in the sense that the more rational points close in, the more rational points for any size, any number of digits, you'll find more such points, the larger the rank. So here's a record. This elliptic curve has rank at least 28. And here are 28, if you turn the set of solutions into a lattice, you would find a 28-dimensional lattice with these 28 points being independent in that lattice. So if you believe what I just said, it means this elliptic curve has lots and lots of very simple points. But of course, that's all relative, because these are the simplest. It just means that once you get out far enough, this constant C can be very small. But you have to go. You have to take very, very large boxes before you can see this effect. And also, if you're really paying attention and have good eyes, you'll notice that I've cheated a little bit, because this equation isn't exactly what I called an elliptic curve. But you can complete the square and the cube to get rid of the extra terms. It just makes the coefficients bigger. So I do. Okay, now more interestingly, maybe, for this question about elliptic right triangles, is that if you can look in this family, y squared equals x cubed minus d squared x that we were looking at, Fermat proved that when d equals 1, it has rank 0, meaning that it's a finite dimension, I mean, it's a zero-dimensional lattice. There are no extra points. And so here are examples with rank 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, or 7. The higher ones were in the thesis of Nick Rogers, who was an undergraduate student of mine at Stanford. But that's as high as it goes, and no one knows examples with rank bigger than 7 in this family. It's expected that the rank can be arbitrarily large. So how does this weight relate to the conjecture of Bertrand, Swinnert, and Dyer? Well, if we go back to our L functions, the L function of E, and expand it as a power series around S equals 1, and ask for the first non-zero term, that's going to tell us how fast this function goes to 0 as S approaches 1. The easiest way the easiest effect you can see is if the first coefficient is positive, if there's no C0, if there's no C0 term, then the L function vanishes, because you plug S equals 1 and you get 0. So the order of vanishing is this first non-zero term, and the fuller conjecture, although not the complete conjecture of Bertrand, Swinnert, and Dyer, is that the rank is equal to this order of vanishing. And that fits with their idea that the more points you have, the bigger the rank is, that should be reflected in this L function by how fast it goes to 0. So that's what this says. And this part, this will get you $1 million from the Clay Mathematics Institute. And so let me just finish by telling you what's known about this. We know that if the order of vanishing is 0, then the rank is 0. This is actually just the same theorem I said before. If there are infinitely many rational points, then the L function has to vanish at S equals 1. If the order of vanishing is 1, so if that power series starts off with a non-zero multiple of S minus 1 plus higher terms, then the rank is 1, as it should be. But that's the end of the theorem, and if the order of vanishing is bigger than 1, we expect even more points, we know even less. We don't know in general that there are any. And this second condition, if the order of vanishing is 1, that's the case when we actually do know how to produce a rational point on the elliptic curve. And we know how to produce a right triangle in the case of the right triangle elliptic curves. But as soon as the order of vanishing is bigger than 1, and we should know more, we know even less.